Hey everyone, welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm kicking off today, New Year's Eve, with a new guest to the show. His name is Justin Hoon. He writes the Uranium Insider. It is a relatively new newsletter focused on the uranium sector. Justin started up this premium newsletter in August 2019. I have gotten a lot of questions about uranium. There is clearly this interest that is coming back into the uranium sector. In all fairness, I tend to see this uranium bullishness pop up maybe once a year or at least every couple years of a lot of people saying, look, uranium's looking interesting. It could really start running. Let's look at some of the stocks. Let's look at what is driving uranium. And in all fairness, I hadn't really met too many independent uranium newsletter writers until I started chatting with Justin. And that's why I wanted to bring you, Justin, on the show for a bit of an introduction. We'll get a little bit of your background, what brought you into the newsletter later on. Let's start off with the uranium sector. You do focus a lot on the fundamentals that could drive the uranium price. Let's start off with some of the key fundamentals that you are watching now for uranium, please.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Corey. Good to talk with you today. Yeah, so the uranium sector has some pretty unique fundamentals that are on the surface pretty basic and straightforward, but to really feel confident in the underlying, that takes a lot of in-depth digging into the fuel cycle, understanding the elements of the fuel cycle. But very basically, it's a growth sector. It's set to grow 1% to 3% per year for the next two decades. There are 454, I believe, currently operating reactors in the world. There's 52 under construction globally, and there's hundreds that are planned and proposed. So it has a very positive demand outlook for the future. And on the supply side, it is very concentrated. There are very few players that are actually even producing uranium right now. Primarily, that's Kazatomprom, a company in Kazakhstan, through a number of JV operations with Cameco, with Orano, with Uranium One, with the Chinese. And the supply is significantly less than demand. So we have a structural supply deficit. We've got a current demand of about 175 to 180 million pounds of uranium equivalent each year. And we have less than 120 million pounds produced. So that's north of a 60 million pound supply deficit in a single year. Some of that deficit is made up with secondary supplies that come from a process called underfeeding, which is the utilization of excess enrichment capacity to enrich tails material or the waste material from an original enrichment process. So that provides somewhere in the tune of 20 to 25 million pounds per year, but we still have a really large supply deficit this year, which is expected to continue, even including secondary supply, to be in the mid 20 million pounds for 2021 and 2022. So we have a really phenomenal setup on the supply and demand side. We've got a positive outlook in the future for demand and growth for the sector. So with uranium around $30 a pound, and with a need for prices at least $15 to $20 higher, it's kind of a setup where it's a guarantee that the prices will rise. It's difficult to get that timing right of when that will happen, primarily because there's been excess supply from the previous gate. We're slowly and hopefully finally working our way through in the coming year, which we believe is the case. So it's a really unique setup. I love the fundamental setup. The sector moves incredibly slow until it doesn't. The fuel cycle is very slow. It's 12 to 18 months from mined material to fabricated fuel that goes into the reactor. So once new demand from utilities contracting and buying in the market, which they have done very little of the past couple of years, once that kicks in, it takes a long time for the supply to respond, which is why the sector moves so violently to the upside when it does finally go. I think that's kind of a basic backdrop of the fundamental outlook here.
All right. So, Justin, in all fairness, I have been hearing this supply-demand imbalance for, it seems like, a couple years now, as we have seen some supply destruction or at least postponement of some of these major mines cutting back their production or even stopping production temporarily. but we haven't seen the price truly skyrocket. And I think that also comes from the demand side of things, because the secondary market has been able to, I guess, satisfy some of this demand when it comes to demand then, in terms of reactors being built or reactors coming back online. Are there any certain countries that you're watching more closely that can provide this bump in demand that can truly make this supply and demand imbalance mean something for the underlying price?
Well, the demand issue that you're attempting to describe here is not really a function of actual reactor demand. So it's more of a function of purchasing demand. So the actual reactor demand is relatively consistent. You know, this year we've had a little bit of flexing down, primarily from countries like France that have, I believe it's 80, 85% of their grid is nuclear. And so the reactors have a little bit of flexibility to flex down their electricity generation, or flex up for that matter. But as far as the actual purchasing demand that has been relatively stagnant has to do with the nuclear utilities purchasing. So the underlying, let's say, burn up of fuel is pretty darn consistent, but the actual demand of purchasing is what fluctuates. And the reason that we've had these, let's call them false starts for a couple of years, probably about 3 years now, is that there's kind of been this false sense of expectation that the market and the purchasing demand would react immediately to announcements of curtailed supply. So, for example, and to some extent it actually did. When Cameco closed McArthur River in July of 2018, there was heavy spot market volume. Utilities and traders bought a lot of material on the spot market. But what that ended up doing was bolstering inventories. And we've also had, like I mentioned a few minutes ago, that we had an excess supply for many years in the 2010s, let's say. After Fukushima, supply was still coming online. It takes so long and so much capital to get production online during the upcycle that sometimes if they lock in contracts, it doesn't make sense for that supply to be curtailed. They just continue to pump it out. A big culprit of that oversupply was Kazakhstan. Prior to them going public, at least partially public in 2018, there was excessive supply that was ramping heavily in the early 2010s. So there was a lot of excess mobile inventory that was available that the traders actually did a lot of work going through that material. So the lack of purchasing on the part of the utilities that we've seen for the last 3 years, let's say, a lot of that has been mobile inventory that has been scooped up in the short and midterm markets. And we've yet to see any substantial long-term contracting the last couple of years, which is what we're expecting to see once the market finally does turn. So the demand question when it comes to, I think your question was, what country could we see demand from that finally kick this in? The demand is pretty consistent. A big part of the demand story is China, and they're continuing to... They don't seem to be faltering whatsoever in their building plans. They've had reactors come online this year. They have got more scheduled to come online next year. They're building dozens of reactors at the moment. So they're a big part of the demand story. But really what we're talking about is utilities coming back into the market and purchasing, whether that's on the spot market or in the mid and long-term contract market, is really what is needed to incentivize this idled supply to come back online. And without those mid to long-term contracts at higher prices, we're going to see a continued supply deficit that will more likely lead to a higher price spike rather than a healthy uptick to a necessary price for the normal functioning market, which is about $50, $55 a pound.
So do you have a general ballpark figure or any more insights on this excess supply or product that is sitting in the market that has been used recently to satisfy some of this demand?
It's really difficult to nail those numbers down, but really ballpark, it's probably somewhere in the realm of 300 million pounds. We assume that about half of that went to China. So you probably have between 100 to 150 million pounds of excess mobile inventory. And when you take the structural deficit of the past 3 years and project that out, we should work through the bulk of that mobile inventory in 2021.
So when this all dries down into companies, because that's one thing you cover very closely in your newsletter, are some of the companies and positions that you're taking for your subscribers, where do you find the sweet spot being? Understanding, too, that it's a relatively small world out there for uranium stocks. It has grown a little bit over the last near term, but still, it's you don't have the options that you do, say, in gold or even silver stocks. Uranium is generally smaller. So where do you find that you're focused on for your subscribers in the stock uranium sector?
True, yeah. It's a really small universe of uranium companies. There's about 60 companies publicly traded. There were close to 500 at the peak of the market, 2007. It grew from maybe a half dozen companies when it began in, let's say, 2003. So as the sector moves, you really start to see a lot of companies come into the space. We've seen about a half dozen companies come in the past 12 months. The sweet spot so far for us has been a couple of companies that are developers. The developers that have good resources, not necessarily tier one assets, but quality assets nonetheless, have management that really is, how can I say this? They really care about shareholder returns. So the excess expenditures in from G&A, general administration, administrative expenses are on the low end. Salaries are on the low end. They're looking at keeping their cash burn to a minimum and therefore their dilution to a minimum, but have been aggressive about acquisitions during the bear market. So in the past 5 years, let's say, have acquired good assets. These companies generally also have a pretty tight share structure. There's not billions of shares outstanding. There aren't millions and millions of, or tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of outstanding options and warrants. So the share structure is tight, insider ownership is high, institutional ownership is high, management is responsible and competent and have successes under their belt from previous projects. That's an important one. And they operate or plan to operate in jurisdictions that at the very least have uranium mining and production legal at this point is important, with the potential of production. So the sweet spot that we look for are all of the things I just mentioned, with developments that have the potential to get into production during the bull market that we expect to last anywhere from, let's say 3 to 5 years, if not longer. It could be a long sustained market, but as far as the investable portion, we're looking at that time frame.
Do you have a jurisdictional preference too? A lot of the bullishness that has come into the uranium sector has been for people saying, the U.S., they're going to tie up some of their own domestic supply. There could be this whole run into U.S. or even North American production. Do you share that same outlook?
There's a few great jurisdictions in the U.S. Texas, Wyoming are probably the top two. Utah is also a great mining jurisdiction. Their grades are generally less. It's usually lower grade hard rock mining in Utah, whereas Wyoming and Texas have ISR mining. New Mexico traditionally has been a good jurisdiction. They have fantastic deposits in New Mexico. It's not as good of a jurisdiction when it comes to mining. There's a little bit more sensitivity around the First Nations and the historical mining that has happened there in New Mexico. Left a big mess in the 80s, unfortunately, that is a lot of it has been yet to be cleaned up. Energy Fuels is doing some of that cleanup work currently, so I'm glad that's happening. So those are good jurisdictions in the States. Canada, Saskatchewan, Canada is a fantastic jurisdiction for uranium mining. There's current production there. Well, at the moment, there isn't any production because of Cigar Lake being closed again due to COVID concerns. But Saskatchewan, Canada is fantastic. And Namibia and Niger in Africa are great uranium mining jurisdictions as well. And Australia, there's a couple of provinces in Australia that are good jurisdictions also.
All right, Justin, I'll give you a little bit of a chance here. Just give everybody a general update on the Uranium Insider, your newsletter, what you offer to subscribers, any information you care to share with us, please.
Thank you. Yeah, we've been doing this premium newsletter, Uranium Insider Pro, since August of 2019. We have a focus list of stocks, companies that we have picked as highly investable, that we feel will be the best vehicles to play for the coming bull market that I believe has started. Our focus list of stocks currently is up about 185% since inception. compared to URA, the prominent uranium ETF, up 46%, and U308 up about 17% since that time frame. So we've done a really good job of creating alpha in the space. We put out a really in-depth monthly newsletter and intra-month bulletins that go out a few times a month based on news flow, either macro or company specific. We think that the market has fundamentally changed this month, December of 2020. Starting at the beginning of the month, there was an article that went out to the Bear Traps report. It's very highly followed by institutional investors. And that really, really moved the market. That article was picked up by Zero Hedge after hours. And the run has just sustained. It's really strong. So institutional interest in the sector, you know, whenever these things move before the commodity, typically that's kind of a sign of good things to come. And we're very bullish about 2021 and beyond. And people can reach me through Twitter at Uranium Insider or just uraniuminsider.com. Feel free to contact us anytime through there. Happy to answer anybody's questions.
All right, Justin, we'll wrap it up here. Thanks for joining me on the show, introducing your newsletter. I will be following along again because there is this new interest in uranium, especially in uranium stocks. We didn't get to the discrepancy between what the stocks are doing and the underlying uranium price being a bit slower to move to the upside. But we'll have more chance to talk about that when I bring you back on the show in the new year. So, Justin, appreciate your time. Thanks for taking time on with us on this New Year's Eve. I hope you have a very happy New Year's, and we'll chat again in 2021. Thank you.
Same to you, Corey. Appreciate having the opportunity.